Thank you for listening to Enabled this week. Bypass those eyes that don't work. Send a signal directly to the brain. Well, that's pretty much what happens when a very experimental device is hooked up. In this program, you will hear about a brain implant that produces artificial vision for people who have gone blind. You'll hear two different stories from different parts of the world. Information about the first person, a Spanish woman, came from Technology Review, a publication from MIT. The website is technologyreview.com. The headline says, "A new implant for blind people jacks directly into the brain." Researchers have successfully bypassed the eyes with a brain implant that allows rudimentary vision. This was written by Russ Juskalian, and it was published in February of 2020. "There, right there," says Bernadetta Gomez, pointing to the large black line running across a white sheet of cardboard, propped up at an arm's length in front of her. "Right there." It isn't exactly an impressive feat for a 57-year-old woman, except that Gomez is blind, and she's been that way for over a decade. When she was 42, toxic optic neuropathy destroyed the bundles of nerves that connect Gomez's eyes to her brain, rendering her totally without sight. She is unable even to detect light. But after 16 years of darkness, Gomez was given a six-month window during which she could see a very low-resolution semblance of the world, represented by glowing white-yellow dots and shapes. This was possible thanks to a modified pair of glasses, blacked out and fitted with a tiny camera. The contraption is hooked up to a computer that processes a live video feed, turning it into electronic signals. A cable suspended from the ceiling links the system to a port embedded in the back of Gomez's skull. This is wired to a 100 electrode implant in the visual cortex in the rear of her brain. Using this, Gomez identified ceiling lights, letters, basic shapes printed on paper, and people. Gomez's first moment of sight at the end of 2018 was the culmination of decades of research by a person called Eduardo Fernandez, and he is director of neuroengineering at the University of Miguel Hernandez in Elche, Spain. His goal is this: to return sight to as many people as possible of the 36 million blind people worldwide who wish to see again. Fernandez's approach is particularly exciting because it bypasses the eye and the optical nerves. Much earlier research attempted to restore vision by creating an artificial eye or retina. It worked, but the vast majority of blind people, like Gomez, have damage to the nerve system connecting the retina to the back of the brain. An artificial eye will not solve their blindness. That's why in 2015, the company, whose name is Second Sight, which received approval to sell an artificial retina in Europe in 2011 and in the U.S. in 2013, they used this for a rare disease called retinitis pigmentosa. That company, Second Sight, switched two decades of work away from the retina to the cortex. Second Sight says slightly more than 350 people are using its Argus II, the retinal implant. During a visit I made recently to palm-studded Elche, Spain, Fernandez told me that advances in implant technology and a more refined understanding of the human visual system have given him the confidence to go straight to the brain. Restoring sight by feeding signals directly to the brain is ambitious, but the underlying principles have been used in human electronic implants in mainstream medicine for decades. Here's a quote. "Right now," Fernandez explains, "we have many electric devices interacting with the human body. One of them is the pacemaker. And in the sensory system, we have the cochlear implant." Next is a quote. Berna, this is the first name of the patient, Bernadetta. "Berna was our first patient, but over the next couple of years, we will install implants in five more blind people," says Dr. Fernandez, who calls Gomez by her first name, Berna. "We had done similar experiments in animals, but a cat or a monkey can't explain what it's seeing." Berna could. Her experiment took courage. It required Brain surgery and an otherwise healthy body, all was a risky procedure. This was to install the implant, and then again to remove it 6 months later, since the prosthesis is not approved for longer-term use. The next section of the article is titled Seizures and Phosphenes. The author says, "I hear Gomez before I see her. Hers is the voice of a woman about a decade younger than her age. Her words are measured, her cadence is perfectly smooth, and her tone is warm, confident, and steady. When I finally see her in the lab, I notice that Gomez knows the layout of the space so well. She barely needs any help navigating the small hallway and its attached rooms. When I walk over to greet her, Gomez's face is initially pointing in the wrong direction until I say hi. When I reach out to shake her hand, her husband guides her hand into mine. Gomez is here for a brain MRI to see how things look half a year after having her implant removed. They look good, by the way. She's also here to meet a potential second patient who's in town and in the room during my visit with her. At one point during this meeting, as Fernandez explains how the hardware connects to the skull, Gomez interrupts the discussion, tilts forward, and places the prosthetic's hand on the back of her head, where a metal outlet used to be. Today, there is virtually no evidence of that port. The implant surgery was so uneventful, she says, that she came to the lab the very next day to get plugged in and start the experiments. She's had no problems of pain ever since. Gomez was lucky. The long history of experiments leading to her successful implant has a checkered past. In 1929, a German neurologist named Ottfried Forster discovered that he could elicit a white dot in the vision of a patient if he stuck an electrode into the visual cortex of the brain while doing surgery. He dubbed the phenomenon a phosphene. Scientists and sci-fi authors have since imagined the potential for a camera to computer to the brain visual prosthesis. Some researchers even built rudimentary systems. In the early 2000s, the hypothetical became a reality when an eccentric biomedical researcher named William Dobell installed such a prosthesis in the head of an experimental patient. In 2002, the writer Stephen Kotler recalled with horror watching Dobell crank up the electricity and watching the patient fall to the floor writhing in a seizure. The cause was too much stimulation with too much current, something it turns out that the brains don't like. Dobell's patients also had problems with infections, yet Dobell marketed his bulky device as nearly ready for day-to-day use, complete with a promotional video of a blind man driving slowly and unsteadily in a closed parking lot. When Dobell died in 2004, so did his prosthesis. Unlike Dobell, who proclaimed a cure for people who are blind, Fernandez almost is constantly saying things like, "I don't want to get any hopes up," and something like, "Right now we're just conducting early experiments." But Gomez did, in fact, see. The next section of the article is titled Bed of Nails. If the basic idea behind Gomez's sight, namely plug a camera into a video cable into the brain, if that's simple, the details are not. Fernandez and his team first had to figure out the camera part. What kind of signal does a human retina produce? To answer this question, Fernandez takes human retinas from people who have recently died, hooks up the retinas to electrodes, exposes them to light, and measures what hits the electrodes. His lab has a close relationship with a local hospital, which sometimes calls in the middle of the night when an organ donor dies. A human retina can be kept alive for only about 7 hours. His team also uses machine learning to match the retina's electrical output to simple visual inputs, which helps them write software to mimic the process automatically. The next step is taking the signal and delivering it to the brain. In the prosthesis Fernandez built for Gomez, a cabled connection runs to the common neuroimplant known as a Utah array. That's like the state, U-T-A-H, a Utah array. This is just smaller than the raised tip on the positive end of a AAA battery. Protruding from the implant are 100 tiny electrode spikes, each about a millimeter tall. Together, they look like a miniature bed of nails. Each electrode can deliver a current to between 1 and 4 of the neurons. When the implant is inserted, the electrodes pierce the surface of the brain. When it's removed, 100 tiny droplets of blood form in those holes. Fernandez had to calibrate one electrode at a time, sending it increasingly strong currents until Gomez noted when and where she saw a phosphene. Getting all 100 electrodes dialed in took more than a month. Here's a quote, "The advantage to our approach is that the array's electrodes protrude into the brain and sit close to the neurons," Fernandez says. "This lets the implant produce sight with a much lower electrical current than was needed in the Dobell system, which sharply reduces the risk of seizures." The big downside to the prosthesis, and the primary reason Gomez couldn't keep hers beyond 6 months, is that nobody knows how long the electrodes can last without degrading either the implant or the user's brain. Here's a quote, "The body's immune system starts to break down the electrodes and surround them with scar tissue, which eventually weakens the signal," Fernandez says. "There's also the problem of the electrodes flexing as someone moves around. Judging from research in animals and an early look at the array that Gomez used, he supposes the current setup could last 2 to 3 years, perhaps even 10 years, before it fails. Fernandez hopes a few minor tweaks will extend that to a few decades, a critical prerequisite for a piece of medical hardware that requires invasive brain surgery. Eventually, the prosthesis, like a cochlear implant, will need to transmit its signal and power wirelessly through the skull to reach the electrodes. But for now, his team has so far left the prosthesis cabled for experiments, providing the most flexibility to keep updating the hardware before settling on a design. At 10 pixels by 10 pixels, which is roughly the maximum potential resolution of Gomez's implant could render, one may perceive basic shapes like letters, a door frame, or even a sidewalk. But the contours of a face, let alone a person, are far more complicated. That's why Fernandez augmented his system with image recognition software to identify a person in a room and beam a pattern of phosphenes to Gomez's brain that she soon learned to recognize. When you bump it up to 25 by 25 pixels, Fernandez writes in a slide he likes to present, vision is possible. And because the Utah array in its current form is so small and requires so little power to run, Fernandez says there's no technical reason his team couldn't install 4 to 6 of these on each side of the brain, offering vision at 60 by 60 pixels or even higher. Still, nobody knows how much input the human brain can take from such devices without being overwhelmed and displaying the equivalent of TV snow. The next section ends the article, What It Looks Like. Gomez told me she would have kept the implant installed if she'd been given the choice, and that she'll be first in line if an updated version is available. When Fernandez is done analyzing her array, Gomez plans to have it framed and hang it on her living room wall. Back in Fernandez's lab, he offers to hook me up to a non-invasive device that he uses to screen patients. Sitting in the same leather chair Gomez occupied during last year's breakthrough experiment, I waited as a neurologist holds a wand with 2 rings against the side of my head. The device is called a butterfly coil. It's connected to a box that excites neurons in the brain with a powerful electromagnetic pulse. This phenomenon is called transcranial magnetic stimulation. The first blast, to me, feels as if someone is shocking my scalp. My fingers involuntarily curl into my palms. A quote, "Look, it worked," Fernandez says, chuckling. "That was your motor cortex. Now we'll try to give you some phosphenes." The neurologist repositions the wand and sets the machine for a rapid series of pulses. This time when she fires, I feel an intense zip, 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 as if someone were using the back of my skull as a door knocker. Then, even though my eyes are wide open, I see something. A bright horizontal line flashes across the center of my field of vision, along with two shimmering triangles filled with what looks like TV snow. The vision fades as quickly as it arrived, leaving a brief afterglow. Here's a quote. This is what Berna could see, Fernandez says, except that her sight of the world was stable as long as the signal was being transmitted to her brain. She could also turn her head and, with her glasses on, look around the room. What I had seen were merely internal phantoms of an electrically excited brain. Gomez could actually reach out and touch the world she was looking at for the first time in 16 years. Next, I have a similar story. This one is from the United States. The information came from a website called 10.com. The article was written by Emily Mullen, and it was written on November 18, 2019. The headline says, "A blind man sees his birthday candles again, thanks to a bionic eye." The subheadline says, "A brain implant helped restore his sight after a tragic car crash." December 2011, a horrific car accident knocked Jason Esterhuizen unconscious. When he woke up in a hospital in Pretoria, South Africa, hours away from his hometown, he couldn't see. The crash had destroyed his eyes and left him completely blind. Esterhuizen was devastated. At the time, he was 23 and studying to become an airline pilot. The first 2 years after the accident were the hardest. He says, "Life changes in an instant. I used to fly airplanes and ride motorcycles and drive my own car." Esterhuizen eventually got mobility training and learned how to read Braille. He uses assistive devices and can work on a computer. And then in 2013, he tuned into a TV news program about a company working on a brain implant that could create artificial vision for people like him. Second Sight is the name of the company, based in Sylmar, California, had just won approval in the United States for a retinal implant designed to assist people with blindness caused by rare genetic order called retinitis pigmentosa. Well, Esterhuizen was not a candidate for that device, but by 2018, the company had developed a brain implant that could change his life. Now part of a small clinical trial, Esterhuizen is one of six blind patients to receive the experimental device, and it's called the Orion, O-R-I-O-N, the Orion. It's meant to provide artificial vision to people who have gone blind from a wide range of causes, including glaucoma, diabetic retinopathy, optic nerve injury, or disease or eye injury. If it works and is proven safe, it and other brain implants could potentially help many more people who are blind. When Esterhuizen learned he was a candidate for the trial at the beginning of 2018, he and his wife uprooted their lives in South Africa and moved to Los Angeles to be in the study. The device, he says, allowed him to see his birthday candles for the first time in more than 7 years. From outside, the Orion looks like a pair of sunglasses with a small camera and a video processing unit. This is a VPU. The video processing unit is attached to the pair of sunglasses. Implanted in the brain, however, is a postage stamp-sized chip containing 60 electrodes that sits on the visual cortex, the part of the brain that processes visual information. When the device is switched on, the camera captures a person's surroundings, and the wireless VPU, the video processing unit, converts those images into electrical pulses using an algorithm. Those pulses are transmitted to the electrodes on the brain, which interprets them as visual clues. The brain implant is what sets the Orion apart from the Argus II and other so-called bionic eyes on the market. Those devices don't require brain surgery. Instead, the electrodes are embedded behind the eye. These retinal implants require recipients to have some functioning cells present in the eyes, which is why they are currently only approved for patients with retinitis pigmentosa, which affects only a small percentage of the 3.4 million Americans who are legally blind or visually impaired. With the current system we're testing, you don't even need to have eyes for the device to work. Retinitis pigmentosa causes the photoreceptors, the light-sensing cells responsible for sight, to gradually die, causing vision loss over time. But other eye cells called ganglions, which talk directly to the brain, remain intact. So retinal implants like the Argus II and those made by France, a French company called Pixium Vision, and in Germany made by a company called Retina Implant. These are designed to stimulate these cells, which transmit visual information along the optic nerve to the brain. About 350 retinitis pigmentosa patients worldwide have received the Argus II device. But the Orion, which shares much of its technology with the Argus II, bypasses the eyes and optic nerve completely. Here's a quote. With the current system we are testing, you don't even need to have eyes for the device to work, says Dr. Nader Pourasian. That's Pouratian. Dr. Nader Pourasian. He's a neurosurgeon at the Ronald Reagan UCLA Medical Center, and he's the one who implanted Esterhazy's device. As the primary investigator of the trial at UCLA, he has outfitted 4 patients with the device. The other 2 study participants received the implant from Dr. Daniel Yoshor. This is Yoshor, Dr. Daniel Yoshor, at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. Despite the risk of infection or bleeding or the possibility that the implant wouldn't work, Esterhazy didn't hesitate to undergo brain surgery. When investigators first switched the implant on after the procedure, they needed to test each of the 60 electrodes one by one to see how much electrical current each needed to receive before the patient started seeing the light. They used that information to make a custom program for each patient, a process that took months. Now, Esterhazy and other participants have regained a limited amount of vision after being completely blind for years or even decades. While they don't see color, shapes, or clear edges or can't read text, they are able to distinguish light from dark. They can recognize moving objects, and they have some degree of depth perception. People and objects appear as dots of light corresponding to where they're located. And as they get closer, more dots appear. Here's a quote. It's like learning a new language, Esterhazy says. You learn how to interpret what's going on. Patients meet regularly with vision researchers at UCLA and Baylor to test the device and learn how to use it. In one exercise, they look at a black computer screen and point to a white square that appears intermittently in different locations. The majority of the time, they can successfully point to that square. It's not natural vision, but Pourasian says the device lets participants do everyday tasks that they weren't able to do before. Here's a quote. It's not that the system helps them become completely independent, but if you can't see anything, being able to see just a little bit becomes extremely valuable, he says. Esterhazy says he feels safer leaving his apartment alone because he can now see when cars are approaching. Now he can sort laundry and even find certain objects in his home. Vision starts in the eye, but it's the brain that recognizes images and interprets them, a process that mostly remains a mystery. Scientists know that the brain contains maps of the visual field and that every location in that field is represented by a unique location in the brain, but they haven't figured out where those exact locations are yet. This is why the Orion and retinal implants can only create a limited range of vision for now. Here's a quote. Our electrodes are big compared to neurons, so we're stimulating a lot of neurons at once, and the brain is interpreting that, says Jessie Dorn. That's D-O-R-N, Jessie Dorn. She is vice president of clinical and scientific affairs at the company called Second Sight. Quote, we're not at the level of each individual cell yet. As a safety precaution, the implant that Esterhazy and the other patients received only uses one electrode array to stimulate the left side of the brain. As a result, they can only perceive visual cues from their right side field of vision. If the one array proves to be safe, eventually, Second Sight plans to implant one on both sides of the brain. Dorn says that her company is also working on ways to improve the technology to enhance the resolution and the range of vision for patients. The company wants to expand the number of implanted electrodes to between 150 and 200, and it's working on improving its camera and the VPU, potentially with thermal vision and facial and object recognition. The researchers are also trying to achieve more natural vision by figuring out how to deliver the electrical stimulation in a way that better imitates the firing of groups of neurons. Here's a quote, this idea that we can stimulate the brain to produce visual perceptions is well known, but the way we need to do it in order to maximize visual perceptions is not as well understood as we want it to be, says Dr. Parashian. Dr. Abdish Basvar, director of the Retina Center in Minneapolis and a clinical spokesperson for the American Academy of Ophthalmology, who was not involved in the Orion study, says much more research on brain mapping will be needed. This would provide patients with a greater range of useful vision. A quote, we have a long way to go before we understand what stimulating the brain will do in terms of vision, he says. If we develop a map of the brain that showed what exact parts generate what type of image or perceptions of the visual world, then we could start making models based on that. The early results from the Orion are encouraging, but brain implants for vision are still very much in their early days. Safety is a major concern. One patient in the Orion trial experienced a seizure after the device was implanted. People who receive such implants will need to be followed for years to make sure there are no complications that emerge later on. Electrodes in the brain also cause scar tissue to form over time, making them stop working, so it isn't clear how long these implants will last. Second Sight's Dorn says the electrodes used in the Orion device should work for at least 5 years. And that means patients will probably eventually lose what little vision they acquire with these devices. Another major limitation of the Orion is that it's only useful for those who were born sighted and later lost their vision. In people who are born blind, the parts of the brain that are responsible for sight are not fully developed, and visual information cannot be effectively transmitted to the brain. A device that could help all people with blindness is still a long way off. And if the FDA eventually approves the Orion, not everyone who is eligible to get the implant will want to undergo brain surgery. The device is also likely to be very expensive. The Argus II retinal implant costs about $150,000, though this is covered by Medicare in many states. Esterhazy, though, is hopeful about the future of assistive technologies for the blind and visually impaired. He says, and this ends the article, he says it's just baby steps for now, but eventually I think this technology will change the lives of millions of people. Well, to summarize today's program, brain implants to restore vision are certainly a revolutionary idea, but in reality it's still a long way off. To end the program, I have a quote for you to think about. The human brain starts working the moment you're born, and it never stops until you stand up to speak in public. This was said by George Jessel. He started out as a vaudeville performer in New York City, became a songwriter, a Hollywood movie star, a movie producer, and eventually hosted his own radio show and even a TV show in the 1950s. You remember Georgie Jessel. Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week.